Happy Thanksgiving and welcome to Turkey Confidential. I'm Lynn Rossetto Casper, and this is the Splendid Table's annual live Thanksgiving call-in, brought to you by APM, American Public Media, and by the employee owners of Bob's Red Mill, purveyors of a wide range of premium flours. You can find all of Bob's Red Mill's premium stone-milled baking flours, including organic and bulk options, at bobsredmill.com. Now, if this is the first time you're spending Thanksgiving with us, here's the setup. Consider this turkey triage and a great time to swap stories or to send up a flare. Trust me, anything goes. From help with the frozen turkey and the pourable pumpkin pie to massaging family egos. Now, connect with us by phone, 800-242-2828. Check in on Facebook or Twitter, hashtag Turkey Confidential, or shoot us an email, splendidtable.org. And by the way, don't forget about Instagram. We want to see what's going on in your kitchen. Well, we're going to be getting help today from some good friends. Chris Thiele, the host of Prairie Home Companion, will be checking in a little later, as well as New York Times columnist Melissa Clark. But first, we're kicking it all off with our dear friend, the adorable and gifted Mario Batali. Mario, happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving, Lynn, from the lakes of Lake Michigan.
I have an image. I can't get it out of my head. You have this home on Lake Michigan, right?
Yes, I do.
Okay, I'm picturing a rambling old North Country cabin, a fabulous fireplace going, an incredible kitchen, the turkey is roasting, and right out the door is Lake Michigan.
That's absolutely right. But keep in mind, there's a pizza oven where my turkey is. Hold on one sec. That's perfect. Now just split it in half. We're in the middle of making our chestnut apple cake, and Leo's manning the batter as we speak.
Is your whole family there?
My whole family's here.
From the Seattle branch?
No, the Seattle clan stays on their side. I'm more of a friends-giving guy family-giving guy.
Well, what are you doing today?
Today we're doing, I generally choose a theme. We have about a group of 24. I start thinking about it in August.
Oh, really?
I plan my menu while I'm sitting on the beach enjoying the last boring days of the summer. This year's theme is Umbria and Toscana, and I just kind of make the same things every year. There's a turkey, there's some kind of a stuffing, there's some kind of a fruit compote, there's some kind of cruciferous vegetable. Today I'm doing raw Brussels sprout shaved with pecorino and Chianti vinegar, along with some shaved fennel. Then there's something that involves some kind of chard or something. Today I'm making neci stuffed with a steamed chard that's been chopped and kind of zhuzhed up with a little bit of robiola. And then my turkey this year is going to be porchetta style in the Umbrian Tuscan variety with lots of fennel pollen on it and caramelized fennel inside.
Now, all right, porchetta style, you better explain that.
Okay, so a porchetta in many ways, in many places, is just a shoulder. But in my favorite places, it's where they take the whole animal, they take the bones out of it, they stuff it with a little bit of sausage, and they cook the whole thing. So it looks like a pig's just lying there, all happy.
And it's usually a pig, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah. It's a whole pig. And he looks kind of happily drunk, and he smells redolent of wild fennel in the forest and everything about him, and they just carve him straight across. So I take all the bones out of my turkey. First of all, I brine the bird 12 hours. Then I take all the bones out of the bird on Saturday before Thanksgiving so that I can use those bones and make a nice stock on Sunday. Then I allow it to dry in the fridge overnight, just kind of boneless and sitting there. Then I make a stuffing with some sausage and some fennel, and I put it inside. Then I roll the whole thing up. I split it into sides, and I roll the whole thing up, and I let it sit in the fridge for 2 days to dry, and then I roast it in my wood-burning pizza oven. So a 22-pound bird broken down looks like two kind of small logs.
Right.
And it cooks in about an hour and 10 minutes.
It's a great trick. You could do it with a chicken because, you know, this whole idea of rolling and stuffing any way you want.
Right.
It's just,
and it takes so much time out of it because a lot of times with a 22-pound bird, you'll be cooking for 4 or 5 hours, and I'm always worried that it's going to dry out.
And you can roll and stuff the day ahead, right?
Right. And that means I can take the bones out and I can make a really nice, rich stock because I take all those bones out and I roast them before. And then what I do is I take the drippings from the pan and pour them into the already existing stock before I thicken it with the gravy using the fat from the pan left in it.
So, all right, there's your cooking lesson from Mario Batali.
I get pretty excited about it because I really like to cook and I really enjoy it when people are around. I also like not having too many hands helping me. And I really just enjoy the whole timing. Like I wrote my time schedule, you know, a week ago on what goes on at 12 and what goes on at 12:15 and 12:30. And it's basically the whole schedule's in order. I lit the oven this morning at around 10:30. So by the time the turkey goes in at 4, it's really nice and warm. And it's already done the flash. I bring it up to about 800. I'll do a couple of crisp flatbreads just for fun. And then by the time I'm really ready to cook the turkey, I want it to be about 460, 475.
That is just, my mouth is watering. And you've got Lake Michigan, too. So.
And I'm looking at it, and yesterday it was tumultuous, and today it is flat and calm. We had a little snow yesterday, which was kind of fun, but it all dissipated in the rain last night. Now, one of our big traditions, of course, on Wednesday night is we have a local bowling alley up here in Northport, and we have a big Lebowski party where everyone dresses like their favorite characters from the Coen Brothers movie, and we bowl until midnight.
Oh, that sounds like a hoot.
It was a hoot.
Hey, you want to take some calls with me?
Sure, absolutely.
Okay. All right, guys. 800-242-2828. We're kicking off Turkey Confidential, and we've got Mario Batali to help. Let's see. Who is up? We've got, now, this is an interesting name, 5Y, calling from Cincinnati. Have I got that right?
Hello?
Hello?
Oh, my gosh, this is why. Lynn Rosetto Casper, you have saved me every year for the last 4 years. You've taught me all about turkey and vegetarians and everything else. And Mario Batali, I cannot believe this. Due to an unfortunate cliff accident, I'm wearing Crocs right now. You are amazing.
Is this a fashion accident?
No, it was a cliff accident.
Okay.
So again, I've turned into one of these annoying NPR people with an annoying NPR problem. I've got walnut trees in the backyard. They're 150 years old. They're all peeled, shucked, ready to rock because I prepared for this a couple of months ago.
Right.
Knowing I would call you, I have nearly 8 cups of walnuts. What am I doing with them?
Oh, boy. Mario, you want to try that one?
Well, it depends. I mean, do you want to make a dessert or do you want to make an appetizer? What do you want to do with them?
I was hoping for something savory. I'm prepared for anything you guys would going to put out here. We can go sweet, we can go savory. Whatever you said is what I'm going to do.
I'd go half and half.
Okay.
I would make a sweet and savory brittle to serve as a little snacky snack with the aperitivi when you start. And what you do is you make like a hardball caramel following the recipe in, I'm sure, Lynn Rosetto Casper's website. And then you stir
in those
walnuts.
That's just boiling sugar and water, a little water. And when it gets to the point where it looks like amber, you're there.
So then you stir in the walnuts, and then after you've stirred in the walnuts and it's starting just to kind of set a little bit, you sprinkle it with a little bit of Malden salt, and you put it out on a sill pad on a nonstick baking sheet and allow it to cool. It will set in less than an hour. And you know, if you're worried about it, you toss in the freezer, and all of a sudden you have a savory walnut brittle. Now, the other half I would take, and I would make a really excellent version of a pecan pie. Now, do you happen to have my new cookbook in your kitchen?
I'm sorry, I don't.
Oh, well, darn.
Why don't we tell folks
you can find a good recipe in either Lynn Rosetto Casper's cookbook or or Melissa Clark's cookbook. Or Melissa Clark, probably on the New York Times website, has an excellent version of a pecan pie. Make it with your local walnuts, and you will capture that ephemeral flavor of the wind as it blows across your backyard in the middle of the
Okay, why? I think you're all set, right?
Thank you so much, guys. Happy Thanksgiving to both of you.
And to you,
thanks
too.
Thanks for taking the time. Okay. Bye-bye.
Mario, I love the idea of the brittle.
When it's got that salt on it, it's sweet and salty.
Yeah.
So you have a little glass of wine, you feel really good, or whatever aperitivo you happen to be having. It really works because I love that sweet and salt.
I have to say, I'd add a little Aleppo chili.
Ooh.
But that's me.
That's why you're you, and that's why I want to go to your house.
Well, let's see who else we've got here. We've got Mary in Fort Collins, Colorado. Mary, what is on your mind?
Lynn, Mario, thank you so much for taking my call. I really appreciate it.
Our pleasure.
I'm trying to make a galette as a main, vegetarian main.
Right.
And we have a dead oven. This is a known issue. Our oven's been dead for a few weeks, and I wasn't worried because we were going to my folks' house to cook. But we have a sick kid, so we're staying home. So I need to figure out how to make this on a grill. I have a gas grill.
Uh-huh.
I have a pizza stone. I have a cast iron pan. I have a few things at my disposal, but I have no idea how to do it.
So describe to me what your galette is made of.
The galette is a butter-based crust, and the filling is going to be butternut squash with cheese, little spinach, out of a vegetarian from America's Test Kitchen.
Okay, so you have a gas grill.
We're having a little trouble with the line. Mary?
Oh, shoot.
Yeah, no, keep talking. Let me see if it's gone away.
Okay. I have a gas grill with three heating elements.
Yeah, we're breaking up. Yeah, okay. You've got a pizza stone. You have a pizza pan, I gather?
No pan, just stone.
Okay, and you've got a cast iron skillet. Okay. All right. Mario, what do you think?
Not a problem. What you do is you make your grill into a convection oven. You make it as if you were going to make it in your oven at home. You put your pizza oven, you put your pizza stone on the left side, or the side that you're not going to have the burner on high. You put that on low. On the other side, you put your burners on high. You put the lid down, and you bring it up to about 350, 375. Then you proceed as if you have a normal oven. What you do is when you put you assemble the galette just like you were going to, then you put it in, you let the cast iron skillet sit on top of the pizza stone on the low, low burner of the gas grill. The other two sides are providing a convection heat inside the actual grill compartment, and you pop it down and you have an oven and you can bake bread in it just exactly like that, the same way. Most people think that grills are for direct heat, but the indirect heat component of a grill is just as effective and often a lot more fun. So make sure one of the burners is completely low, and that's the one where you let it rest, the pizza stone is, and the other two are on blazing hot, and they will create an oven environment inside that grill.
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. I think Mary had a hang up because of phone trouble, but I know she's listening. So
okay, great.
She got it. Absolutely. We've got Ron. No, we've got Art or Ari. Ari in Washington, D.C. Ari, what's up?
Hello.
Hello. Hi. What do you want to talk about?
I want to talk about pumpkin pie, and specifically a pumpkin pie crust triage situation that I'm in the midst of right now. And,
yeah.
You call that. Specifically, you know, I couldn't find the recipe I used last year to great success. And, you know, when I put the, you know, I made the crust and rolled it out, put it in the pie tins,
yeah,
and really started to collapse when I put it in the oven, just melting back into the center of the pan. And obviously that's no good. I don't know if there's too much butter in there. I think the ratio should have been right, although it seems very buttery, but, you know, a good crust.
Is it oily that it's collapsed back into the pan, or is it just shrunk?
It sort of collapsed back into the middle. I mean, there's no sides on these pies. Yeah.
Did you just roll it out and then put it in the pan and bake it? You didn't rest it after you rolled it out?
I rested it in the fridge, but perhaps not for long enough.
Okay, Mario, what do you think?
Jeez. You're trying to blind bake this crust and then put some kind of a something inside it? Is that the idea?
Yeah, I just want to set it in the oven first and then put the pumpkin filling in. And I should say, you know, I tried to cook it at 425, so now having taken it out and sort of mashed the, you know, crust back into shape and put it back in the fridge or the freezer, you know, I'm sort of like, what is the next move? And is there a way?
Okay, so now is it up against the walls? I mean, is it? Have you forced it back up along the sides of the tin?
I have done so, and it's in the fridge, so it's kind of staying there. It's kind of
okay. So here's what I recommend. I would say take a piece of parchment. I would put that on top and carefully fill it with either rice or beans so that it holds it in position while it bakes. That's called a blind bake, and we do that with pastry crust so that it won't move or melt at all while the heat is applied to it, which will allow that structure to set and cook.
Yes, that sounds like a great idea.
Fantastic.
That is the gold standard for how you do an empty crust. And once you've got that nailed, you're home free. Hey, Ari?
Thank you both so much for this.
Good luck, my friend.
You are welcome.
Nothing is insurmountable, my friend. Nothing.
And you have a happy Thanksgiving.
You too. Thank you so much.
All right.
We have Alessio calling from Dallas. Alessio, what is the pressing question from you?
Yes. Hello.
Hello.
This is this is a cultural question. And first, I want to say to Mario, buongiorno del ringraziamento.
Grazie.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Prego. Grazie a lei.
So, you know, from a cultural background, this is the first time I do a Thanksgiving dinner. I'm Italian, if you didn't figure out. And I have never done it, but today I'm making the turkey the way that I know how, you know, it would come out good. I'm stuffing with the rosemary, some fennel bulb, and some garlic. I have the skin inside with a rosemary, garlic, a little bit of brown sugar, olive and canola oil, and rubbed around. So I'm also making a focaccia, two focaccia, one to give to the neighbor, and gonna have a nice salad. But what I'm afraid of is my guests, they're American. I'm afraid, I don't know, from a cultural point of view, am I taking over Thanksgiving, making it too Italian? I don't know.
There's no way you can make it too Italian. The beauty of Thanksgiving is that it is the story of America is the story of immigrants. And as we bring each of our cultural reference points to it, it becomes the melting pot. And each of these traditional dishes eventually melts into what becomes the collective recipes of each of the regions, both from where we come from and both where we settle. And that is the most remarkable thing about it. Don't worry. You're not losing anything. We are gaining something here that you're here.
Okay.
And that deliciousness is that. It will enrich our flavors, all of us together collectively.
And Alessio,
thank you, Mario.
Thank you,
Alessio. If you probably heard what Mario said in the beginning, and his menu is Toscana and Umbria, and what you're
my menu is Sardinia.
Aha.
Fantastic!
Oh, that's wonderful. And the menu I grew up with my family, which is Veneto e Toscana, was.
You know, if you guys come to Dallas, you need to come to my Italian group. I have an Italian group in Dallas. I would love to have you, Italian language group in Dallas. Mario, if you ever come, please join us.
I would love to. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ciao.
Have a wonderful Thanksgiving. Mario, have a wonderful Thanksgiving, too. Thanks so much for helping out.
Thanks for having me on, Lynn. It's always a delight to hang with the true pro.
I feel the exact same way.
All righty.
You take care.
And all right.
Look at that lake for all of us.
All right.
Take care. Bye. By the way, Mario has a new book out. And as he was talking about, you know, what America really is, his book is The Big American Cookbook. Mario has stepped away from Italy. Okay, let's get back to your questions. You can call us at 800-242-2828. And I've got our producer, Jennifer Russell, here. Now, her beat is social media. Jen, what are you finding?
Hey, Lynn, happy Thanksgiving.
You too.
Happy to be here in the studio on this side of the glass with you today, by the way. So I am watching Twitter. It's Thanksgiving, and social media is absolutely blowing up. There's a lot going on. I'm following the hashtag Turkey Confidential, and we are getting lots of questions.
So what are some, give me an example.
Let's see. Okay. So Alex, just sent a question through Twitter, and she's coming up with a side dish for vegans. So she wants something that she can make with no dairy, which I imagine a lot of people are wondering about today.
Right. Yeah. I mean, everybody's got something that they're not eating these days. And here's the deal. I think so many side dishes that don't have dairy. One of my all-time favorites is if she's got some fruit in the house, like, you know, winter fruit, pears, apples, onions, cut everything in wedges, toss it with a little bit of olive oil or canola oil, some salt and pepper, and then cut the onions in wedges too. And what I love to do with that is then take fresh herbs. For instance, one of my favorites would be thyme. And if you have some rosemary, and if you have fresh sage, well, we'll get to that in a minute. And the idea is, and sprinkle everything with a little bit of cinnamon or allspice.
Sounds really good.
And then roast it or saute it. You know, if you've got one oven, you can saute it. If you've got two ovens, you can roast it. And you can serve that at room temperature as a side dish. It's just delicious. The other thing, though, is if you've got some fresh sage leaves, put a little oil in a skillet, drop in the sage leaves when the oil is hot, and you'll see they'll start to crisp up. It takes less than a minute. Scoop them out, put them on some paper towels, give them some salt, and top that dish with the fried sage leaves.
Oh, that sounds good.
Yeah, fried sage leaves are dynamite almost over almost anything. You know, boil a carrot, put fried sage leaves on it, and it's going to be dynamite.
All right, so you've just helped Alex and all of those others cooking for vegans today.
Here you go. Okay.
And we'd love to have you join the conversation. So check us out on Twitter. And if you've got questions, get to us using hashtag TurkeyConfidential.
Well, we've got Alyssa in Roseville, Minnesota calling. Alyssa, what do you want to talk about?
Hey, Lynn. Happy Thanksgiving.
You too.
Thank you. My wife wants me to pass on a message, which is that you are one of her favorite parts of Thanksgiving every year. So thanks for being on the radio.
I like working with her, too.
Okay, so here's my question. I'm curious about what red and white wine pairings you would recommend this holiday season for this particular meal, given the political angst that may or may not be in the air at many people's Thanksgiving tables.
Well, I don't know if a lot of wine's a good solution for that. Let's take the angst first, and then we'll hit the wine, okay? Okay, look, if ever there was a year where if you think you're going to be dealing with a contentious situation with the folks you have around your table, cut it off at the pass. When people come in and they first gather, maybe pour everybody something to drink, and it could be hot cider with some whatever in it. But the point is, just say, look, for one day, let's put all of this stuff aside. Give ourselves a vacation from it and try to enjoy each other, because you don't need arguments. And, you know, it's just bad to have bad feelings on Thanksgiving Day. So that's my suggestion on that. Just stuff it, put it away, put it aside, leave it at the door. It'll be there when you leave. Anybody who wants to have a discussion, have it on the porch. The other thing is, as far as what to drink, well, if you analyze the meal, usually the last thing you're worried about is what goes with turkey, because it's all the side dishes. And when you think about cranberry sauce, which is sweet with a little acidity, sweet potatoes, sweet, you know, the Brussels sprouts and all that, and then the white potatoes, which are going to be buttery. This is what I would do. I would do a dry Riesling, Treffen. If you can say that fast six times, you get an award. Treffen makes a fabulous dry Riesling, which is just delicious on its own with almost anything. But Riesling's a great wine. Even if it's a little sweet, it's a really good wine for this particular meal. The other wine I really like a lot is Lambrusco, which you're beginning to see a lot of them in the market. This is a sparkling or fizzy red wine from the Emilia region of northern Italy, and it is a wine that comes sweet and dry. I prefer the dry, and it's really meant to go with rich food, because that's an area that produces a lot of really great cured pork. And so this is a wine that is drunk with that kind of food. So, you know, how rich Thanksgiving can get. I would vote for a Lambrusco. And if you can't find Lambrusco, think about something like a Merlot, or think about a rosé, a full-bodied rosé. The other thing is a Beaujolais, and in the best of all possible worlds, it could be a Fleury or a Morgon. That's the very classy Beaujolais. But any Beaujolais is going to work. So I hope that helps.
Thank you so much, Lynn. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. That's your diatribe for the day.
I love it. Thank you.
You too. Have a great Thanksgiving. 242? Well, let's do 800 first. 800-242-2828. That's how you can reach us. And of course, you know, there's Twitter, there's Facebook, there's Instagram. We want to see your pictures on Instagram. Show us what's happening. It's hashtag Turkey Confidential. Yeah. Oh, Jen's raising her hand.
Okay. I just wanted to point out a trend. Lynn, you wouldn't believe all the photos of children in the kitchen cooking this year. It's really great. I think hashtag young cooks is going to start trending anytime soon.
But, how
and
young?
They're listening to the show.
How young?
Like 11, 10.
Oh, you guys, this is fabulous.
Yeah. So
this is wonderful. Start them young.
Starting
but you know,
young.
If you think about it, I think a lot of us started cooking when we were young. The results may not necessarily have been stunning, but it was hanging out in the kitchen with your mother,
Yeah. You
know, mashing the potatoes, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember I always got the jobs where there was a lot of stirring.
Yeah, I got to wash the dishes.
Oh, you lucky thing, you. Absolutely.
You have a minute for a question?
Sure, absolutely.
All right. We just got a question on Twitter from Lineback. She's got a 22-pound brined bird. Her husband has new poultry shears. And the question is, cut, spatchcock, or leave alone?
You can choose. I think you want a spatchcock. I mean, this is the year of the flat turkey. Let's face it. It's been around a while, but spatchcocking is a very good idea because what you're doing is you're butterflying it. So if he cuts on either side of the backbone just to remove it, and he can put it in the roasting pan, it'll add flavor to the sauce. That's what I would do. It cooks in about half the time, and you can glaze it with stuff toward the end of cooking. And it's going to be delicious, absolutely delicious. Right. And by the way, spatchcocking, a.k.a. butterflying, do you know spatchcock is a word that was first used in the 18th century in Ireland, and it supposedly came from the expression of a chicken meeting its end, spatch the cock. And the curious thing is you'd think it was a rooster,
yeah,
but it wasn't. It was a hen. That is your trivia for Thanksgiving
Day. You know
everything. No, I just know one or two things, but I repeat them often.
Yeah.
You can call us. Let's see. We've got Luella calling from Nashville. Luella, what's up? What do you want to talk about?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call today. It's a very basic question. This year, my family, last year, we're doing a free-range, rather large turkey, right, and it is brined, and to keep it, I have noticed not all turkeys that are free range are the same, and you have to cook them a little differently. Some can be a little less tender.
Yeah.
We have had in the past. Yeah. So what are your suggestions for keeping that turkey, especially the breast meat, tender? What is a great glaze? What's your favorite glaze for a turkey? Any kind of hints you can help us with that, because it has been a bit of a struggle for us in trying to do this. So.
How do you normally cook the turkey? At what temperature?
Usually I would do it at 350 for about 4 hours.
That's a pretty good idea. I would say 325.
325.
Because that just tends to make it juicier. But you know, there's another way you can go with this. If you do not stuff it, okay?
Yeah. And
it's going to, you don't stuff?
No.
Oh, this is brilliant. You're going to be shocked.
Okay.
But you want to do 450 degrees for 10 minutes to the pound.
Okay. Wow.
Preheat the oven. Yeah. Have the turkey on a rack. Put some liquid. I like to put vegetables. And wait, is this a whole turkey or is this the breast of the turkey?
Well, I do the breast because we're just two of us here.
Oh, I see.
But my family is doing the big turkey. And I thought, well, man, I probably need to ask about that because it would be horrible for her to split. My daughter's doing the turkey this year and she does a great job and she's very meticulous and she's all organic. And
well, that would be how you do the whole turkey. But if you're going to do the chicken, the breast, 325, about 14, 15 minutes to the pound until it's about 160 in the center of the bird on an instant reading thermometer. And if you do, if you have jam, you've got a glaze, a little vinegar, a little bit of spice, and you're home free.
What's your favorite Thanksgiving dish?
I would say probably my sweet potatoes. But unfortunately,
ooh,
I've got to go, girl.
Okay.
You have
thanks
a good
so much
one.
Okay. All right.
We're going to be back with Prairie Home Companion's new host, Chris Thiele, and the New York Times' Melissa Clark. I'm Lynn Rossetto Casper, and you're listening to our annual Thanksgiving broadcast, Turkey Confidential, from APM, American Public Media.
I'm thankful because you care. I'm thankful for dreams we share. When you came along, I was born anew. That's why I'm thankful to you. Oh, I'm thankful for happy hours. I'm thankful to all the flowers that smiles up at us from underneath the dew. Darling, I'm thankful to you. You seemed so far above me each time you said you loved me. A rainbow shoots across the sky. I've made quite a catch, and though I'm not your match, I'll do my best to satisfy. Oh, thankful baby.
Hi, it's Lynn Rossetto Casper with Turkey Confidential from The Splendid Table and American Public Media. Happy Thanksgiving. Now, today we're here to help cooks and non-cooks all across the nation. So give us a call. Our lines are open. You can call us at 800-242-2828. And if you can't get through, join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Share photos on Instagram using hashtag Turkey Confidential. And by the way, if you don't already follow us, do it now. Okay, let's get back to business. Chris Thiele is on the phone. Now, Chris is the man that the London Independent called the most remarkable mandolinist in the world. And he has this radio gig every Saturday. He's host of Prairie Home Companion. Chris?
Hello.
Hello. How are you?
I'm great. So glad that we're getting to have this little chat.
Well, you know, it's Thanksgiving, and, you know, you've got this new gig, and I thought it might be fun to talk to you. And how's the job going?
Job couldn't be more enjoyable. This is a dream come true for me. I mean, it's a dream I didn't know I had. It's a dream along the lines of the ones that I had when I was a child, you know, wishing that maybe I could be a Jedi when I grow up. I knew that I couldn't actually be a Jedi, but I would pretend to host Prairie Home Companion when I was little. I would talk about powder milk biscuits and rhubarb pie and things like that. And so lo and behold, when Garrison actually calls me up and says, Chris, what would you think about hosting the show? it's like George Lucas calling me up and saying, you know, this is actually all real and I would like you to consider becoming a Jedi.
Not an easy thing to do. And you have a rough commute, don't you?
Yes, I'm out here in Portland, Oregon. But there are lots of directs into the Twin Cities. So I have this crack of dawn direct that I take on Thursday, which I find very bracing. I get up at 5 in the morning. I'm a musician, mind you. So 5 in the morning is a time that people like me tend to only experience from the other side.
That's
a possible going to bed time. But I fly out and I start writing a little open, whatever silly words I say at the beginning of the show, I start writing on that flight. So if you're ever wondering why they are as silly as they are, consider that I tend to have not gotten much sleep when I'm writing them.
I empathize totally because I'm a person who believes that 2 o'clock in the morning is when you're working or you're doing brilliant things. And
yes.
5 o'clock in the morning is when you're asleep. Now I'm really impressed by what you're doing.
Oh, thank you very much.
Hey, tell me about today. What's happening today?
Well, this is a big day for us because this is our first Thanksgiving as the host couple.
Ah.
So we're hosting a bunch of couples. A turkey is, I think, even now in the oven. And my wife's favorite thing to do is, whenever we're hosting large groups of people, is to try a recipe she has never tried before. She's accomplishing, even now as we speak, a feat of utter daring upstairs.
I have great admiration for her.
She has an oyster stuffing going on, and she's also indulging me. Though I consider myself to ultimately have an advanced palate, I really like those yams with the marshmallows on them. I really do.
I like them too.
It's fun, right?
Well, there's something I'm curious about, because I understand you really love to make cocktails. What are you going to drink today?
Oh, I have one all picked up. So I'm so glad you asked. I've been obsessed with sherry recently.
Ah.
I'm that annoying wine guy at one of these things. So the cocktail, it's actually just called simply the sherry cocktail. And it's what I love about sherry, that oxidized part of sherry, that nutty thing. Like, to me, it's kind of like pistachios and things like that. It kind of like just goes with anything. It'll work with the yams and the marshmallows. It'll work with the turkey, the cranberry. It laughs at cranberry sauce. So, but it's like 3 ounces of Oloroso sherry, which is one of these fuller body, but totally, dry as a bone and very robust. and then some orange curacao, but like a strong, fairly dry orange curacao, tiny bit of maraschino liqueur, couple dashes of Angostura bitters, couple dashes of orange bitters, dash of absinthe, just a cheeky dash of absinthe, you know, and then a lemon peel. I'm excited. We haven't gotten into those yet, but we'll get to that.
I think at this point, I better let you get back upstairs. And okay. Chris, have a wonderful holiday.
Thank you so much.
We'll see you in the neighborhood quite soon.
Oh, yes.
And take care.
Thank you again. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving. Chris Thiele is host of A Prairie Home Companion. I worry about Chris. You know, he's so shy. You can reach us. Check us out on Facebook and Twitter. And you can call us 800-242-2828. Send us an email, splendidtable.org. Well, now it's time to talk to someone who I always enjoy talking to. She is the genius and the columnist at the New York Times, and her name is Melissa Clark. Melissa, happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to you, Lynn.
You know, we both work similarly. We're food writers, and we're one of a profession that at this time of year, well, things get really tough,
yes.
Right?
Yes, absolutely. This is our crunch season.
Yeah, I mean, we have to be turkey nerds every single year. Every single year, you have to come up with the be-all and the end-all turkey recipe. And, but you have to top yourself every year. So may I ask, madam, what are some of your favorites that you've come up with?
Well, you know, I really love I love a classic roast turkey. You know, I love it with just a ton of herbs and garlic and salt. I mean, I think that when you're starting with a good bird and you just keep it simple, you're going to get a good result. You know, it's just going to be.
Yeah.
But along the more exotic lines, I have started doing something called splaying my turkey, which is a fun technique. And especially when you look at the turkey, you're like, what have you done to that turkey? Because what you basically do is you cut the skin between the leg and the thigh, and then you take the turkey legs and you lie them flat. You kind of almost dislocate them. You pull them out of their sockets, and they're still attached to the bird, but they flop right open. And what you're doing is creating space between the dark meat and the light meat. And then I sear those legs on the bottom of a roasting pan while, you know, still attached to the turkey. I sear the whole bird, and the dark meat starts cooking. And I add some onions to the bottom of the pan, and I'm almost braising the dark meat. But the white meat, the breast, is sort of rising above everything else, and it roasts. And it roasts beautifully. So you get these kind of half-roasted, half-braised legs, and you get this beautifully roasted breast, and it happens fast, and it happens evenly. Lynn, do you have that problem? Like, the breast meat sometimes can be a little bit drier than you want it, but you want the dark meat.
Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah. So this eliminates that problem. And that is, and it sounds crazy, and I have to say, it looks crazy, but it really tastes good.
You know, we've been talking about this because I believe it's the year of the flat turkey.
Are you going to spatchcock this year? What are you going to do?
I'm going to spatchcock. I've used to do this with chickens all the time, but you have done the best explanation of the how-to that I've ever heard. Thank you. I told you you were a genius. Hey, how about taking some calls together? Are you game? Okay, let's see. Who's up? We've got Nina calling from Amberley, Ohio. Nina, hello and happy Thanksgiving. What do you want to talk about?
Hello, happy Thanksgiving. And I just wanted to say I love your show.
Ah, thank you. Thank you.
I wanted to talk about vegetarian stuffing. I'm trying a recipe that I tried a couple of weeks ago for Friendsgiving, and now I'm trying to do it for the family. But the last time I made it, it was a mixture of celery, carrot, leeks, a little bit of nutritional yeast, some mushrooms, flavored with like oregano and sage, and a homemade broth. But when I cooked it in the oven, the top was too dry and the bottom was too wet, and it kind of shrunk. It wasn't like a full fluffy stuffing. The flavor was good, but the texture wasn't right. So when I redo it, is there anything I can keep in mind?
Oh, genius.
Lynn, what do you think about covering it?
I did cover it for the first part, and then I removed the cover for the next part of the cooking. So I cooked it around like 375, which I don't know. It's what the recipe said. It could have been too hot for like maybe 15 or 20 minutes, and then I took it off and cooked it for another like 10.
How deep was the pan?
Probably about 4 or 5 inches.
Melissa, do you think that could be part of the problem?
I think so. Do you have, so was it was it like a casserole dish that you baked it in, like a deep casserole dish?
It was kind of a deeper dish. It's like a kind of a tin. It wasn't a glass dish. But, it, you know, it's pretty thick. It's typically, you know, what you bake brownies in when you make brownies. That's pretty much all I had. So I just threw it in there. And I didn't even think about the dish that I was putting it in.
Well, a brownie pan should be okay, like a 9x9 brownie pan.
Yes, exactly, like a square. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that should be okay. That's not going to be that deep.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know what I wonder for thickening, and, you know, we're talking vegan here, but first of all, what about the idea of pureeing a cooked vegetable?
That's a good idea.
Yeah, or, you know, making the base. I'm just thinking of what holds it together but would be delicious.
Yeah.
Is using something like mashed sweet potato or mashed potato.
Oh, I actually do have some of those.
Oh, if you have some, that's perfect. That's such a good idea.
Yeah, because...
So would you recommend baking them and then mashing them or boiling them? What's the best?
I think maybe to keep them on the drier side if you have time baking. But Melissa, what's your thought?
Yeah, absolutely. Bake them because then they'll dry out even more. You know, prick them all over, bake them at 350 for an hour or so. And then, yeah, that would work. So right now there's no binder other than the bread, right? There's no egg or anything, obviously, because they're vegan.
Yeah,
so the potatoes will help. I think they'll help. I think that's a great idea, Lynn. I think they'll help tighten it all up.
They'll add such a good flavor.
Absolutely. Awesome. And if you can have some fun with that, too. I mean, you can spice them. You can chili them. You can do a lot of onion, sautéed onion, you know, that practically melts.
Garlic
would be wonderful.
I'm a big garlic fan.
Yeah, no, you know, garlic braised in olive oil.
Until
it's soft.
That sounds delicious.
As the potatoes bake, you braise the garlic. Or you could just bake a couple of heads of garlic with the potatoes, and then you just pop them out, and they go into the stuffing.
Oh, that would be wonderful.
You know, your stuffing, I think, is going to be the best thing on the table.
I can pull it off, but thank you so much for your help, and happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
We saved her.
I know.
Doesn't good?
Vegan stuffing is hard because, you know, you don't have the eggs and you don't have the broth and the butter. Like, those are, you know, what you normally rely on for your stuffing. So it is challenging, but it's possible. And I love the sweet potato idea. I think she will, too.
You know, it's that old business of anything you thicken with should have flavor.
I can't stand adding water to a recipe. Like, why? Don't add water. Add wine. Add apple juice. Add soy sauce.
Yeah. And flour? No.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, that's such a good point. Although, if you toast flour and then you add it, then you get a new flavor.
I haven't done that in ages. Thanks for saying that.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, that really is. We've got, Jessica's calling from Burlington, Vermont. Jessica, hi. What do you want to talk about, dear?
Hey, Lynn, happy Thanksgiving.
You too.
Hey, so I need kind of a real-time bailout right now. I made this wonderful pumpkin layered cake, and it was called for a mascarpone buttercream frosting.
Yes.
It was super easy recipe, but I have like these little, I missed the step of sifting the confectionery flour. So it's kind of bumpy.
And you're talking about the frosting.
Too. Sorry?
You're talking about the frosting now.
Yeah. Yep. Cake is delicious. Frosting, I need help.
that's easy. That's an easy fix.
Okay.
You've been beating it, right?
I have, and I'm just worried I've overbeat it.
Okay, for frosting, you don't have to worry about overbeating. I mean, it's mascarpone and confectioner sugar, and then there's some butter in there, too?
Yep.
Yeah, you're good. You're good. All you have to do, I mean, two things you can do. You can just continue. Are you beating it with a whisk or a paddle?
So I'm just using my handheld mixer. But just not the whisk. Should I use a whisk instead of, like, the traditional beaters?
Yeah, use the whisk, because basically what you want to do is you just want to break it down as much as possible. It will melt. Yep. Let it sit for, how long has it been sitting?
Well, I it's been in the fridge and setting up, so I tried to do just the bottom layer, and it was just getting really slippery, and I wasn't so much bothered by the little balls as I was just by the consistency of it.
I would continue, you know, I would, if you have time, it depends on how much time you have. If you have time, two things you could do. One, you can continue to beat it and it will smooth out because that sugar will melt, you know, it will, but you'll just have to let it go for a while, but then it will get very slippery and you'll have to chill it down again. And I don't know if you have time for that. A quicker fix is just press it through a sieve.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah.
And that'll break up all those little balls.
Yep. Perfect. Perfect. Thank you so much.
You are so welcome.
And have a great Thanksgiving. Great save, Melissa.
You know, that I've done that before. I've had the same problem with my confectioner sugar. You know, you think, oh, I don't really need to sift it, but
it looks
you really
so
need
smooth.
To sift it.
Yeah, you really do. You really do. Hey, Melissa, thanks so much for pitching in.
Oh, Lynn, thank you so much. It's so great to talk to you and have a fantastic Thanksgiving.
And you too.
Bye.
Goodbye. By the way, Melissa has a book that's going to be coming out soon. It's called Dinner, A Strategy. Okay, let's see. Who have we got here? We have Mark in Chicago. Hey, Mark, what's up? What do you want to talk about?
Hi, Lynn. Thanks for taking my call and happy Thanksgiving.
And to you too, sir.
I wanted to talk about deep frying a turkey.
Uh-huh.
My family's going to be doing this for maybe the first or second time ever. And what is the secret to get a juicy bird yet crispy skin?
Okay. Have you brined the bird by any chance?
I'm not sure if my dad did or not. I'm a fan of brining.
Okay. All right. Well,
guess no.
The basic thing here is that the oil has to maintain a steady temperature, and the bird has to be close to room temperature when it goes into the oil. So you want the oil between 350 and 375, and you want to keep it there. You know, you don't want it, when the bird goes in, it's going to drop. So that's when you raise the heat a little. So you've got to keep that balance going, that when it seems that the temperature, you need a good thermometer, and that when the temperature starts to drop, you just raise the heat. When it starts to get too hot, you bring the heat down. So you want to maintain 350 to 375. Usually you figure about 10 minutes to the pound. And it should be delicious. Absolutely delicious. And of course, if you've done it before, you know all the safety precautions. You know, you don't want to splash it in. You lower it in. There's usually a special device with the fryer that you can lower it in, you know, very gently. And then when you lift it out, you do not touch it. Use mitts or whatever if you have to pick it up or lift it, but don't use your hands. That's very hot oil on the surface. So that should do it for you.
How do you know when it's done, and are you supposed to let it rest?
Yes, you want to let it rest about 15 minutes. And the way you know it's done is that you can lift it halfway out of the oil, and you can take an instant reading thermometer at the center of the breast. And at some place that's where the thigh is very thick. And it's done when it's reached about 160 degrees at the thickest part of the breast, chest in several places. And then you rest it for about 20 minutes to 30 minutes.
Okay.
Okay?
Thank you very much. Happy Thanksgiving.
And to you, too. You're going to have a dynamite turkey. Thanks a lot. Take care. You can call us, you know, 800-242-2828. Jen Russell, what have we got on social media?
Hey, Lynn. Well, I am following the hashtag Turkey Confidential trend on Twitter, and it is going crazy. Happy to report that there aren't too many disasters or panic emails and tweets coming in, but we do have a couple. And one just came in from Jenny, who says she is making pilgrim pumpkin pie. It will not set. Help. She sent a picture. Here it is. It looks like soup, pumpkin soup inside of a squash.
It does, but I think the problem is that if she's baking it inside of the squash, it takes a long time for the heat to penetrate. So maybe what she wants to do is raise the heat a bit, okay, by 25 degrees perhaps, and it's going to take longer. And if she's got an instant reading thermometer, that pie is done when, if you stick a thermometer halfway between the edge of the pie and the center, and you go down about halfway, so you're really right in the middle of the custard, it should be 170 degrees.
That's great advice. I think you just saved Jenny's dessert.
Yes. And if, by the way, if it's still not working for her, then what you want to do is put it in a saucepan and cook it very gently. Keep stirring it and stirring it until it reaches that temperature. Clean out the squash, heat it up, get it all baked, put it back in the squash, and you're done.
Excellent.
You know, cheat.
Yeah. Okay? All right. Okay.
We have got a call. Let's see now. We've got Peter in Rochester, New York. Hey, Peter, what's up?
Hi, Lynn. Happy Thanksgiving. Thanks for taking my call.
You are welcome.
I was wondering if you had any advice on preparing risotto ahead of time, but without it tasting reheated when you go to serve it.
Now, this is going to be your Thanksgiving main dish?
Side dish, squash and steamed kale.
Ooh, that sounds delicious. Okay, this is a restaurant trick. Most people who believe in very authentic Italian food right now are going to be starting to write me nasty emails. But trust me, I worked in a lot of Italian restaurants, and this is how they do it. That's my cover.
I took a class at the Culinary Institute up here one time, and they shared the trick, and I don't remember what it is.
Well, the trick I remember is that you go through about two-thirds of the way through the recipe of adding the liquid. You know, first you do the sauté, you add the wine, et cetera, whatever ingredients you're supposed to add. And then you take that, and you've oiled a shallow half-sheet pan.
Okay.
And you spread it out on that half sheet pan, because the goal is you want to cool it down all at once so that you don't have part of the rice is cooking longer than another part of the rice. So that's
okay.
So you spread it out in a very thin layer. You put it aside. And then when you are ready to serve it, give yourself about 10 minutes beforehand. You're going to add a little bit of broth to your saucepan that's large enough to hold it, and you're going to scrape all of that into that broth, and you're going to start working it over medium heat. And you'll finish cooking it, and then you give it, it's a period called mantaccato, which actually kind of translates in my book to don't touch it, you know, leave it. You fold in a bit of butter, and you fold in a bit of parmigiano, if that works for your recipe, and you just let it rest. It's at the point where the rice still has a tiny bit of bite, and it's like waves. It's thick enough that it just kind of forms waves, but it's not soupy at all. And you're home free.
Thank you so much. Happy Thanksgiving.
You too. Have a good one. Risotto. Oh, I love it. Fabulous. You can reach us. You know the number, okay? It's 800-242-2828. We've got Lancaster. Yeah, I'm reading a note on the computer. Bridget Lancaster is going to be coming up in a short time. She's from America's Test Kitchen. Hey Jen, social media, I see you have a note.
Yeah, Jen here. So we are seeing a lot of questions coming in about preparing non-turkey fowl, which is interesting. So lots of questions about Cornish game hens, grouse, pheasant.
Okay. If it's game, grouse, pheasant, etc., usually the legs you want to cook separately from the breast, because often those animals have run the 4-minute mile before they met the demise. And trust me, you've got rubber bands. So you treat the legs where you brown them, you add a little bit of moisture of some kind. So it could be broth, it could be wine, it could be cider at this time of year, and herbs, brown vegetables, and you cook them very gently and you set that aside. The breast, you roast, generally speaking, at about 350, even lower, 300. And I love to, I love basting with wine. But the idea is if you want to baste it, you baste it. But a lot of people like to have game breast with a blush of pink, which means at about 150, you'll take it out and then give it a good rest.
Excellent.
Yeah. And that's
excellent.
It. That's right. That's now with the Cornish hens, treat them like baby chickens.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
We're starting to see a lot of tabletops, too. So keep the questions and the photographs coming. Hashtag Turkey Confidential on
Twitter.
Here.
Well, let's see. We've got a call from St. Louis. Stephen in St. Louis. Stephen, what's up?
Hi, Lynn. Great to be on your show today.
We're very happy to have you.
So basically, I'm bringing a – this is kind of untraditional thing. I'm bringing a tofurkey to a friend's house this year, and there's like an instruction of cooking on the back, but I was just wondering, how can I spice it up just instead of like a regular tofurkey?
Okay. All right. There's a rub I love to do. Olive oil. Okay. Some kind of citrus, like the zest of an orange, the zest. Okay. Have you got some lemons?
Yeah, a couple of lemons.
Okay, so you can do orange and lemon zest, you know, where you just use a grater and you get just the colored part of the rind off. Okay. And that goes in with a bit of olive oil and a lot of garlic. And you put that into a pan, all right, and you just start to warm that. You want to just brighten those flavors and then let it cool for a few minutes. Now, what kind of herbs have you got hanging out?
Some thyme, sage, and a little bit of rosemary.
Okay. Do you like spicy flavors?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. We've got the citrus, we've got the olive oil, we've got the garlic. The other thing you're going to put in that pan is a bit of allspice or cinnamon, okay, and some chili powder if you've got it. And then you're going to put in some, if you've got ground coriander or cumin. Does that...
I think it got just a little bit of the... Yes, I think it got both of them.
Oh, great. That's going to warm that in the oil and then let it cool down. And then what you're going to do is pour that over the tofurkey. And then when the tofurkey goes into the oven, you're going to baste it. If you've got some apple cider, some fruit juice, and mix that with a little wine. And you're just going to keep basting it as it cooks. Okay?
Okay. And one more question, is it?
Sure.
So basically, my mom baked pumpkin pie yesterday, and you know how the pumpkin pie is supposed to be flat? Well, the pumpkin pie sort of like domed up on itself and then collapsed after we bake it. So I was just wondering if there's any way we can salvage it for tonight.
Sure. Is it cooked through?
It's cooked through, but it just like looks really ugly in the middle. It's like it has sort of like a meteor striking on it.
I understand. That's why they make whipped cream.
Just whipped cream on it. That'd be fine.
Just pile whipped cream on it. And tell people it's the newest interpretation of pumpkin pie.
Okay, thank you so much, Lynn.
Okay, have a good one. Pumpkin pie and all. Jen,
hey.
What have you got for me?
All right, Lynn, Twitter's blowing up. Ben just sent a tweet, and he says, help, I put too much salt in my green bean casserole. What to do?
Well, there's the classic thing of slicing some potato and putting that in because it absorbs the salt. But I've got a great idea. He did a green bean casserole. Let's change the green bean casserole flavoring. Let's add a bit of sugar to it and a little bit of vinegar. Sweet sour solves every single problem. Take a saucepan or a skillet, pour in about, well, if it's a big green bean casserole, a cup of vinegar. Boil that down to about half, okay? Boil it down by two-thirds. And stand back. It's going to be a little acidy, you know, steam. Salt and pepper. A little bit of onion can be cooked with that. And then you stir in some sugar and you let that melt a bit. Be careful, though. You don't want to burn it. Let it cool and then taste it and then stir that in. You can have a lot of that and it'll cover up. The salt will be complementing it.
Listen to you, saving the day on Twitter.
Sweet and sour, that's my key. Well, thanks for spending your Thanksgiving with us. You have a good day. And by the way, let's leave all the political discussion at the door. We're going to be talking with Bridget Lancaster from America's Test Kitchen and the New York Times' Frances Lamb. I'm Lynn Rossetto Casper. This is The Splendid Table, Turkey Confidential from APM, American Public Media. Hi, it's Lynn Rossetto Casper with Turkey Confidential, The Splendid Table's National Thanksgiving Day call-in, brought to you by APM, American Public Media, and by the employee owners of Bob's Red Mill, purveyors of a wide range of premium flours. Now, you can find all of Bob's Red Mill's premium stone-milled baking flours, including organic and bulk options, at bobsredmill.com. Happy Thanksgiving. It's our annual must-attend event, our Thanksgiving Day call-in. Now, we're here to take your questions, swap stories, revel in your successes, and pitch in to do saves in those moments when things get a tad scary. Now, you can get to us in a bunch of ways. The phone is 800-242-2828. Connect with us on Facebook or Twitter using hashtag Turkey Confidential. We also want to see what your Thanksgiving Day looks like. So share your photos with us on Instagram. You know, the good, the bad, and the maybe not so gorgeous. Hey, trust me, no matter what is happening, all is going to be fine. And to be sure, I'm bringing in some of my favorite pros. Frances Lam will be here a little later in the show, but right now we're joined by Bridget Lancaster. She's host of America's Test Kitchen TV show. Hey, Bridget, welcome. Good to have you here. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to you too, Lynn, and to your whole audience.
Well, thank you. You know, Bridget, I've heard a rumor that...
That's never the start of a good conversation.
Well, no. I think this is going to be just fine. No, I heard you've got a little action going in your basement, that you have a brewery going in your basement.
Yes. My husband and I have been brewing beer for, I want to say it's definitely over 20 years. The last five, we've really sunk our teeth into the process, and we can't stop. You know, how many hobbies do you get to enjoy the fruits after the end of it? So it's a lot of fun. Yeah, we have four beers on tap right now.
Give me the list.
We have a Czech Pilsner. We have an IPA. An IPA is something we've been working on for a long time. It's not too hoppy. We don't like the ones that are just super, super hoppy.
Right.
I've got a really nice Irish red ale in there. And, we're finishing off our we call it the lawnmower ale. It's the end of our summer brew. You know, light and refreshing. You can squeeze a lemon into it.
Aha.
Kind of perfect.
So are you home cooking today, or are you going to be going out?
No, I'm home cooking. I've actually been home cooking for almost the past month. I made my gravy about 3 weeks ago and took that out today. I'm letting it defrost, and I really believe in a lot of make ahead. And my husband's working today, but he's going to be home later to enjoy Thanksgiving with just the four of us, my two sons and my husband and myself.
Now, I understand he's a chef.
He is. Yep. He's a chef. Locally, I always say Thanksgiving, Mother's Day, and Easter, he's busy cooking for everyone else. So I give him a break on Thanksgiving. That's one of their busiest days of the year. I think he said they have 400 reservations.
Oh, my goodness. I'm thinking how lucky your kids are with two pros in the kitchen.
You'd think that, but I think it's like the cobbler's children have no shoes. my kids are like, okay, which speed dial for pizza should we call right now for dinner?
Yeah, pizza in the shape of a turkey.
Well, exactly.
How about, want to answer some questions?
Would love to.
Okay, I know you never do this. So, okay, we've got Ray, and I think it's pronounced Thieldale. And Ray, what do you want to talk about?
That's right, it's Thieldale.
Hey, I got it right.
Thanksgiving to you guys, and thank you for providing this wonderful service.
Oh, you are welcome. You are welcome.
I want to know how to make a glaze. I'm planning to use pineapple juice as sort of the base. I'm planning on maybe brown sugar and or honey, depending on what you guys tell me to do.
Okay, and what is this for?
It's for, I'm sorry. I'm just so honored to talk to you guys. I can't think straight. it's for ham. I think I was probably adopted because my family doesn't like turkey, so we're doing a turkey and a ham.
That's always a good combination.
Yeah, and I think you're in good company. I think there are a lot of people who feel like, oh, do I have to do a turkey? I know someone is doing steak today. I think it's a wonderful idea. But Bridget, what do you think? Glaze for ham.
Well, I think since you're using pineapple juice, which is already liquid, I would probably go with the brown sugar. And if you can go with dark brown sugar, that's going to have a much more potent flavor. But I think it's a good opportunity to add a little bit of allspice in there, if you like. That pairs really nice with pineapple. and a little bit of soy sauce. That's going to add not only color, but it's going to counter a little bit of that sweetness, so it's not all going to taste, you know, just like candy on the top of your on your ham. So I would probably start with a little bit of pineapple juice, dark brown sugar, and a little bit of soy sauce.
That sounds like a great idea. I have to say, because I'm a chili lover, I would do one or two squirts of Tabasco.
Oh, yeah.
And
little heat.
Yeah, it's a punctuation mark. Let's put it that way. At the end of
a little sweet and a little heat.
Right, right. Does that sound okay?
I love that. Thank you so much.
Oh, you are welcome.
How long do I cook it? Like, do I get it fairly thick to the end?
Yeah, I would cook that down and get it relatively thick. It's not going to take too long because you've got a lot of sugar in there between the pineapple juice and the brown sugar. You know, put it in a small saucepan. I would only go medium heat. You don't want to go too high or you can risk scorching the sugar. So medium heat, probably about 8, maybe up to 10 minutes.
And thank you guys so much and happy Thanksgiving.
And to you and your family.
Thanks, Ray.
And thank you, Bridget. That was a great, great way of just going right through it. I
should cook with you all the time. I forgot about the hot sauce.
I like hot sauce. What can I tell you? Yeah. Well, we've got Jennifer in Tampa, Florida. Jennifer, what's up? What do you want to talk about? Oh, and happy Thanksgiving.
Well, good morning and happy Thanksgiving to both of you. And I love to hear you talk about hot sauce. I just made my red chili, so.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Oh, I'm good to go. I don't care what it is. I can put red chili on it. It'll be fine. But I'm making a salad, which has been my yearly thing for whatever reason. But I decided this year to kind of shake it up, and I'm going to roast my vegetables. I've got in the oven right now apples. Carrot, onion, garlic.
Wow.
I'm trying to think what else is on the tray. Then I also have some radicchio that I want to roast.
Mm.
And then I have some arugula that I'm going to keep nice and fresh for, you know, a crisp, cool. I'm looking for a dressing, something citrusy maybe.
Oh, yeah.
I got some delicious navel oranges.
You are in Florida, aren't you?
Yeah, I am. Yeah, and some good New Mexico red chili, but, you know. And I wouldn't mind putting some red chili in my dressing, so I'm all ears.
What do you think, Bridget? I'm just thinking about the concept of the sour orange that you do fresh orange juice with lemon or ideally lime juice.
Mm-hmm.
So you balance that sweet and you have tart, and then you could do some red chili with that.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
I think that sour orange is perfect. You mentioned the root vegetables that are going in there, so they're really sweet already. And that
right.
sour orange is also going to help to balance out the bitterness from the radicchio.
Yeah, and I'm sorry. Don't. Go ahead,
no,
please,
I was
Jennifer.
I was just thinking about with just an emulsifier, too, with the orange and the lime, maybe. Olive oil, maybe, or... I've got almond oil. I've got coconut.
Ooh. Almond oil? What do you think?
Almond oil and orange sounds absolutely amazing.
God, that
together.
Sounds wonderful. There's only one trick, though, with any of those nut oils, you know, like walnut and whatever. Give it a little taste because sometimes they're fragile and they go rancid, just to be on the safe side.
Yeah,
because
it was brand new. So, yeah,
okay. Then you're home free.
I think I'm safe there. But yeah, now I've just been looking for a reason to, like, you know, grasp it and start using it. And I'm like, I'm using it in salad.
And you've got... go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. I was just saying, great. You've given me some really good ideas just with the lemon and orange, too. The lime and orange.
You know, a little trick from the test kitchen, we found that just about a teaspoon of mayonnaise, I promise nobody's going to taste it. But if you add that little teaspoon of mayonnaise into that, that's going to help to keep it emulsified for a longer period of time.
Oh, clever. I want to work in your kitchen.
Don't we all?
I mean, I seriously do. Hey, lady, thank you so much. You've given me some great ideas. I hope it turns out.
It will. It will. Don't worry about it. It's going to be dynamite.
I'm so
happy
excited. Thank you so much.
Take care. Don't you love the idea of the roasted salad?
Yes, I'm kind of regretting my choices today.
Well... Yeah, I'm thinking of going home. I have a little time. You know what I'm wondering? Have you ever found anyone who has tried to infiltrate the test kitchens, maybe hide a tiny microphone under a counter, to, you know, hear all the genius that happens there as you test recipes?
You know, that's an idea. We might have to start sweeping for bugs.
Yeah, I think that, I think, you know, this could be a project for someone. Okay, let's see. We've got, Tom in Medford, Oregon. Tom, what's up? What are you thinking about?
Well, I'm going to cook a 10-pound turkey, beer can style, on the grill, smoke it lightly. Afterwards, we always take the carcass and boil it down to make turkey soup.
Right.
And our regular has become Jimmy McCormick's turkey vegetable chowder, which is a light cream chowder. And we've also started looking into and working on pho. And I know with the pho, you boil the beef bones for ages with multiple water changes to get the clear broth.
Yeah.
I was curious what you would think, you know, was any of that necessary or would you suggest on boiling the turkey carcass?
Well, the one thing about pho is that usually the carcass itself is raw. It's not already cooked. And so when you go to clarify the broth as you're cooking it to get all the collagen and any of the cloudy bits out, you might not be able to get as much of that out since you've already roasted it. So I wouldn't worry as much about clarity of the broth as I would about flavor.
Mm-hmm.
I love the idea of a brothy turkey pho. That just sounds so perfect, especially if you added some chilies in there, some lemongrass, a little bit of ginger, all of that. Smash some garlic cloves. All that's going to add such an aromatic broth. I wouldn't worry too much about the clarity of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's a wonderful trick, too, along with those seasonings, where you roast some sliced up onion, garlic that you've smashed, but it's still in the skin, some clove, cinnamon stick, and a few star anise. And that goes into the broth. I mean, but you put that, you roast it, or you put it under the broiler. And the idea is
to caramelize it. Some.
Yeah, just to get a little brown on those onion slices. You don't want to burn anything. But Bridget, have you ever tried that?
I haven't, but that sounds so good. That sounds absolutely amazing,
yeah.
Especially with the star anise and the other spices. Yeah. That sounds really incredible.
I have to say, I've actually taken a canned broth when I'm in a hurry and just done mm-hmm. that. I mean, it's not just for pho. It's just, I love that combination. It's just delicious. But so this sounds like a great idea, though.
If you're going to crush the garlic whole with the skin on it and then roast it, are you going to filter the skin out later?
Well, you're going to strain the broth, right?
Right.
So, you know, that's just part of the seasoning. So it'll come out.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And,
well, I want to thank you very much. You've become as much a regular for us as Alice's Restaurant, and we certainly appreciate your effort today.
Hey, thank you. That's lovely company to keep.
Happy Thanksgiving, Tom.
Yes, thank Tom. You. Take care. Great question. Bridget, we've got Melissa calling from Durango, Colorado. Gorgeous country in Durango.
Lynn.
Hey, hi, Melissa. Happy Thanksgiving.
Hi, happy Thanksgiving. This is me and my son, Liam. Hi.
Hi, Liam.
Hi, Liam.
He's 8 years old, and he is helping me in the kitchen today. And we are making the creamy Brussels sprouts bacon gratin with shallots and Gruyere.
Yes, as we say.
Wow.
Sounds good, right?
Oh, absolutely fabulous. Absolutely fabulous. So, Liam, what part of it are you going to make?
Liam's going to make the cheese sauce.
Ah,
I'm making the cheese.
This is great.
we could only find 12 ounces of Gruyere in all of Durango. So we need to substitute about 6 more ounces of another cheese. And we wanted to ask you what you would recommend.
What do you think? What do you think, Bridget?
Well, I think Parmesan is always a good bet. Mm-hmm. And it has a salty profile like Gruyere. I'd probably add a little bit of that, and if you want a little bit of a creamier cheese that doesn't have too much flavor, so it's not going to make the dish too salty, a little bit of Monterey Jack. Those two combined,
right,
kind of, and then a little bit of nutmeg add in there as well, and that's going to help kind of make it feel like you had Gruyere in there the whole time.
Perfect. Okay, so Monterey Jack, Parmesan, and nutmeg. You got that, Liam? Got it. Thank you guys so much.
Hey, Liam, if you decide you want to help other people with Thanksgiving in the future, you just let us know. We think we can get you some good jobs.
He would love to. He's my mini chef. He would love
I
it.
Love it. I love it. Liam and Melissa, have a wonderful Thanksgiving.
Thank you, Lynn. We love you.
And
Take
we
care.
Love you, too. Thanks for calling. You know, oh, really, guys, I don't know what we'd do without our audience. We would not have a show. That's what it that comes down to.
he is adorable. I'm going to make the Brussels sprouts.
I
I'm
love
make
it.
The cheese sauce.
Oh, that kind of enthusiasm. May it go on forever. We've got Kevin calling from Northern Iowa. Kevin, God, you live in one of the loveliest, that open prairie. God, anyway, what do you want to talk about, Kevin?
Well, actually, I'm from Black Neck, Kentucky.
I am sorry. We put you in the wrong state. I like Kentucky a lot, too.
I know Kentucky
that's fine,
well.
That's fine. Well, my mother-in-law this morning, she put our turkey in a crock pot to cook and set it on high, she thought. 3.5 hours later, and it was supposed to be on a 5-hour cook, she realized, oh, no, I have it on low. So now we're trying to figure out what do we do.
Well, do you have an instant reading thermometer?
Okay.
Because if you tuck it in, Bridget, what I'm thinking now is this turkey going to be tricky from the point of view of being at too low a temperature for too long to perhaps, get a little dangerous?
Well, we found that the difference between high and low settings with slow cookers has nothing to do with the temperature that they cook at. It has to do with how quickly it takes for the slow cooker to come up to that temperature. So high only means that it heats up faster than low setting. Once it starts cooking, it cooks at the same temp, believe it or not. So, in terms of comparing it to when she usually cooks it on high for 5 hours, I'd say that it's either very close to done or, it might just need another half hour. But what I would do is I would take it out of the slow cooker. I would definitely take an instant read thermometer. That turkey should be, it needs to be above 160, 165.
Yeah, that's what I thought too.
Yeah, and have you checked your turkey's temperature?
We have not. I actually had to go into town. Well, I went into town to get it, and there wasn't any there, so I had to go home and grab my own from my house. So I just now delivered that. So we're waiting. We're awaiting the magic number popping up here any moment.
And so what I would probably do is I would take it out of there. I would, if you can, break it down into, the legs and the thighs and the breast, keep that whole, put it on a sheet pan and put that in a 350, 375 degree oven to finish the job and make sure. But I wouldn't leave it in the slow cooker for any longer than that.
All right. Well, thank you very much, ladies. You'll have a happy Thanksgiving.
And
you too. Kevin.
And you too. And Bridget, you have a happy Thanksgiving. Thanks so much for help. And
it's been such a pleasure and an honor, really, to be on the radio with you. I can't believe I'm talking with you.
Well,
this is great.
I'm very flattered, but know that the feeling is entirely mutual. I think we're going to be talking in the future.
Yes, definitely. Hey, happy Thanksgiving.
And to you, from all of us here. Now, Bridget Lancaster is the host of America's Test Kitchen on television. And by the way, you're going to be hearing more of Bridget and her entire crew at America's Test Kitchen because they're going to be joining us on a weekly basis in the new year. So be sure to tune in. Okay, let's get back to callers. Oh, wait a minute. Jen Russell is raising her hand.
I'm here. There is yes. a fire and ice theme happening on Twitter, I just have to say.
Okay.
So I'm going to read this from Kristen, came in on Twitter using hashtag Turkey Confidential. She says, it wouldn't be Thanksgiving without a small oven fire while listening to Turkey Confidential. Somebody else has set the oven on fire with sweet potatoes, and we had one deep-fried turkey explosion. Nobody's been hurt. So,
all right. Okay.
Be careful, people.
Yeah.
And then there are people with frozen turkeys. So Impossible Salt just got to us on Twitter. They have a 9-pound turkey and it's still frozen, and the guests are arriving at 4 for dinner.
How do we know where they are so we know when four is coming?
Well, it looks like he'll probably have about 4 hours.
Oh,
Max.
As we used to say in French, un morceau de gâteau, a piece of cake.
Yeah, okay. He's in Minneapolis.
He's in Minneapolis?
3.5 hours.
Okay. All right. You're good. And it's a 9-pounder, so it's not a huge turkey. Okay. First of all, just an aside, every kitchen should have a hacksaw. You never know when you're going to need one, and this is one of those cases where it's really handy. In the best of all possible worlds, if you have a hacksaw, you can saw this thing in half or in quarters, and then what you can do is put each one in tightly wrapped, you know, either a sealed plastic bag or wrap it up in plastic wrap, and you put it into cold water so it's submerged, each piece. And in probably, I would say about an hour, it is going to probably be pretty much defrosted. And to find out, you stick an instant reading thermometer into the thickest part of the bird. Now, I realize you now have a bird in sections, but when you get done with it, you'll roast it in sections. It'll roast faster, by the way. And then you'll slice it in a way that no one will know the difference. If you don't have the hacksaw, still submerge the turkey in cold water, all right? And if in about an hour and a half you don't see that it's really defrosting, you're going to put it into a low oven. You're going to put it into something like a 275-degree oven. You're going to, as it starts to warm up, you're going to get the package of giblets out of the center of the bird, and you're going to season it, and you're going to cook it very slowly for a long time until that instant reading thermometer at the center of the breast tells you that it's at 160 degrees or a little bit higher. Okay? So the idea is if you cook it gentle heat for quite a while until you sense it's defrosted and you've tested it right down to the bone, then you can raise up the heat. I hope that's not too complicated.
It sounds good. Great advice. And we hope that helps. Do you have time for one more?
One more.
Okay, quickly. On the opposite side of that, Ilhan says, help, the drumsticks are burning. She just put in a 24-pounder 2 hours ago, and she sent us a photograph of those.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I see.
Burning. So what should she do?
Well, I think she's already done it. Light cover of foil. Don't seal it. That'll steam the bird. But cover them lightly with foil. Tuck in the foil, you know, between the side of the turkey and the drumsticks. Okay. And by the way, if you're using a high heat cooking method, this will help a little bit because sometimes things burn. Or if you're using any kind of sugar or sweet things in what that is on the turkey, that tends to burn faster. So protect it by lightly tenting it with foil. Okay. And that's, and then toward the end of cooking, you know, you can finish browning off pieces that are not browned and you're off and running. We better get to the phones.
Yes.
I can feel people just, you know, they're going to break through the barrier soon. Yeah. Kirsten is in University City, Missouri. Kirsten, what do you want to talk about?
Hello. Hi. Happy Thanksgiving. I had a turkey smoked at a country store this year.
Uh-huh.
And they recommended that we slice the meat all off to heat it up today.
Right.
I was wondering if we could wrap it, the whole turkey, in foil and heat it up, or if that's just a bad idea and I should cut the meat off.
Well, they know what they have. They smoke the turkey themselves?
Yeah.
I kind of follow their advice. But what I think I would do, may sound very strange, I would fan the meat on the pieces of foil, okay? You know, so that you're not stacking the breast meat, for instance.
Okay.
You've thinly, you know, you've sliced it fairly thin and you're fanning it so it's all going to heat up evenly. I'd spread it on pieces of foil and then just top it with another piece of foil and, you know, you make a big flat package. That's the basic idea. Do the thicker parts of the turkey in another package.
Okay. Okay.
But the idea is sprinkle it with water before you seal the package.
Okay. And that'll, they said like 175. So really low oven?
Because you want to do that very slowly.
Okay.
That's really low, though.
Yeah.
I think I would start at around 250 to 275.
Okay. And it should take, I don't know, a half an hour, an hour?
I think the thinner the package, obviously the faster it's going to cook. If you're going to do whole drumsticks, I would figure 45 minutes.
Okay.
Okay? If you're going to slice the meat, then a half hour. I would even check the temperature after about 20 minutes.
Okay.
Okay?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. And by the way, folks, this you can do with a cooked turkey if people are running late, it's a snowstorm or whatever. You can save it, and that little bit of water keeps it from drying out. But don't heat it in a microwave. It's also hard to fit a turkey in a microwave anyway, so it's a moot point. Okay, moving on. We've got Abigail in Grand Junction, Colorado, one of a gorgeous place to be. Abigail, what do you want to talk about? Hi.
Sorry.
No, that's okay.
As you can hear, I'm an Australian girl, and I'm married to an American boy, and we're both vegetarians. So I've got the hang of, like, getting some vegetables and all that stuff together.
Right.
But my boy wants some kind of dessert that's chocolate-based for dessert. Yeah, he wants a chocolate-based for dessert. And I don't know what to make for Thanksgiving dessert that's chocolate-based.
Okay. Well, chocolate is not necessarily totally identified with Thanksgiving, but I would not make that, you know, stop me in any way. Now, you know, one of the things you could do is essentially a I'm throwing this around in my head to see what would work, because I'm just thinking of doing the equivalent of a pumpkin pie filling that that you do with an additional egg yolk, and then what you do is you streak it, you know, you would just bake it as a pudding or bake it in a pie crust, but what you want to do is have melted chocolate that you marble through it. So when you get it into the pie crust, you kind of do a big zigzag of a generous amount of melted chocolate, and then you do a little bit of a stir. So it looks like marble.
And perfect.
It could be really delicious. That's if he likes pumpkin pie, because all the spices you put in the pumpkin pie are going to be delicious with the chocolate. And there's one ingredient you never see in pumpkin pie recipes, and I think it makes delicious chocolate and delicious pumpkin pie, and that's a generous amount of vanilla.
Vanilla?
Vanilla. Like for a 9-inch or 8-inch pie, I would use a teaspoon or so of vanilla extract, if you've got it. If you don't worry. It's just a nice touch.
No, I have it. Don't you worry. So, no, get up.
You're taking very good care of your boy, aren't you?
Yeah, well, we'll see. We'll see how it all tastes in the end.
I have no doubt that it is going to be fabulous.
Thank you so much. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving.
And you too, and welcome to the United States.
Oh, thank you.
Take care.
Bye.
Now, we're going to be back with more of your calls and get some help from the New York Times' Francis Lamb. I'm Lynn Rossetto Casper. You're listening to The Splendid Tables, Turkey Confidential, and we're from APM, American Public Media.
I've got plenty to be thankful for. I haven't got a great big yacht to sail from shore to shore. Still, I've got plenty to be thankful for. I've got plenty to be thankful for. No private car, no caviar, no carpet on my floor. Still, I've got plenty to be thankful for. I've got eyes to see with, ears to hear with, arms to hug with, lips to kiss with, someone to adore. How could anybody ask for more? My needs are small, I buy them all at the fire.
Hi, it's Lynn Rossetto Casper with Turkey Confidential, The Splendid Tables nationwide culinary call-in, brought to you by APM, American Public Media. Happy Thanksgiving. Now, you can get to us a couple of ways. Pick up the phone, 800-242-2828. Use hashtag Turkey Confidential and send us a tweet. Tag us on Instagram. Find us on Facebook. Just get in touch. Francis Lamb joins us this hour. Now, he's an award-winning food writer, an editor at Clarkson Potter, and columnist at the New York Times Magazine. Francis, happy Thanksgiving.
Hey, happy Thanksgiving to you, Ann.
So you're working today.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's not really work. You know, it's kind of fun. And everybody's in a good mood today. So it's really
great.
Yeah.
You know, it was probably destined to be a fraught Thanksgiving for many people. So I'm glad to hear that.
No, I think, you know, this is one of those Thanksgivings. I think we got to put it away.
Yeah.
You know, just for the day, you know, my line, leave it at the door. If it's going to be contentious, or just tell, if you're the host, just tell everybody, look, I don't want to hear a word about it. We have so much else to talk about, okay?
Let's talk about pie.
Yeah, exactly.
And then
exactly.
Someone's going to be like, no, cake is better. And then it comes, and then it starts.
Yeah, oh, yeah, I love that debate. I like them both. I'm an equal opportunity sweet eater. But, you know, speaking of eater, I haven't asked this question of our guests, and I think it's really something significant. What are your memories of Thanksgiving when you were a little kid?
Oh, wow. You know, my memories of Thanksgiving are kind of funny. They're pretty weird because so my parents are from China, and I was born and raised here. But, you know, and they understood that Thanksgiving was a holiday and it was a big deal here, but they didn't grow up with it, right? And so they didn't grow up with, certainly not with the same food traditions, and, you know, they didn't really quite understand what a quote-unquote American Thanksgiving was supposed to look like. They just knew the kids had the day off from school, and the kids would keep coming home and talking about turkey. And, you know, so, there's this old cliche of how, like, oh, the Chinese will eat anything. Well,
yeah.
I think it's really the Chinese will eat anything except turkey. My
That's
parents would not eat a damn turkey. Like, I would come home and scream for it because all my friends would have it, and I would feel like such a weirdo if I'd go back to school on Monday and not have talked about the turkey we had, you know. But they're like, why would you eat a turkey? It's a big, dumb bird. It's dry. It's, you know, Chinese people don't typically, like, roast a huge thing like that to eat. You know, like, you would cut into pieces. You would make different things with it. And so they just never understood the appeal of turkey. Like, we have chicken. We love duck. We love squab. Don't eat a turkey. So I would be very upset. And it's funny because a lot of my memories of Thanksgiving are actually about how my parents tried to get me to either shut up about eating turkey or try to, like, bait and switch me.
What do you mean bait? What did they use?
Yeah, so, like, when I was a kid, like, my favorite restaurant in the world was Pizza Hut. And I distinctly remember one Thanksgiving where, again, I complained about not having turkey. And so my mom went out to the Pizza Hut and got me a big pile of, they used to serve, like, spaghetti and meatballs. I don't know if they do that anymore. But they got me a big pile of spaghetti and meatballs from Pizza Hut. And I was so excited. It worked. Like, I totally forgot about complaining that we didn't have turkey that year. But, like, so year after year was like that. They would try to find some way to try to, you know, like, get me to forget about it.
It's a very sweet gesture.
Well, the best part was the one time I finally gave in. And I actually wrote a story about this for Cooking Light this year. But they finally gave in and said, okay, we're going to get him turkey. And they told me, and I was like, oh, my God, really? I was so excited. And when we came to the dinner table, there was, like, rice at every plate, you know, at every plate setting, like
right. We
normally do. And I was like, huh. And then there was a big pot of soup in the middle, which was, and there was, like, a big pile of, like, stir-fried greens. And those are, like, three things you always had at every meal.
Right.
And now I'm starting to get suspicious, like, where's the turkey? Because they started to bring out other things, like other stir-fried vegetables and, like, maybe some, I forget exactly what else was on the table. But it basically looked like dinner on any other given night. And I was like, wait a minute. And then my mom pulls out of the oven a plate with tinfoil on it, and she takes it off.
Oh.
And she had gone to the grocery store, to the deli counter, and gotten sliced turkey from the deli counter.
Oh, sweet, though.
And warmed it up for me to have. And I think, to this day, like, I remember being like, of course, because you're a kid and you're a brat and you're horrible. I was so disappointed. Like, this wasn't a big, you know, bronze turkey or whatever.
Yeah.
But now in retrospect, I think, like, you know, it's actually such a perfect symbol of what their immigrant experience is. You know, it's about being in a place where you don't really understand what's going on around you, and it's about trying to learn, and it's about trying to make your own culture fit with it. And for them, honestly, like, being able to go to a grocery store and get anything in the world you wanted, like, that's what America was all about for them. That's what they came here for, that kind of opportunity and that kind of bounty and that kind of plenty and that sense of possibility. So I still laugh at the warmed over deli counter turkey, but in a way I do think it's really sweet. I think it's really lovely and it's really true to who we were as a family.
Yeah, it is symbolic, isn't it? I mean, the thing about and you know what I hear in the story too, that on one hand, we're all children of immigrants. But I mean, I can remember not wanting to eat Italian food. I was raised in an Italian family because I wanted to fit in.
Sure.
And
totally.
And yet by the same token, it's so funny that as I grew up, of course, what do I become? I become a food writer.
Mm-hmm.
And what do I write about initially? I write about attempting to do the most authentic version of the food of a region. It's that process. And food is so much a part of how we identify ourselves.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so the sliced turkey was a great sacrifice for your mother. Hey, okay. Now, how about we take some calls together? I'm putting you to work, okay? All right. We've got Adam in Fort Collins calling. Adam, you know the proverbial question. What do you want to talk about?
Hey, Lynn, thanks so much for taking my call. This is a two-part question.
Okay.
I'm going to be smoking the turkey on one of those Traeger grills.
Uh-huh.
And my question is, and it's going to happen tomorrow. I'm actually en route to Nebraska.
Okay.
So my thought was catch the drippings in a pan while I'm smoking it.
Yeah.
So they don't go to waste.
Right.
Are those drippings going to be too smoky to make gravy out of?
I think they might be, or they might be too salty. Are you brining the bird?
Okay.
Are you brining
it's
the
being
bird?
Brined right now. Yeah, apple juice. Okay.
Yeah, well, boy, that sounds delicious, though.
Yeah, it's going to be good, I hope. My second part of the question, then, is the gravy I do make, we have a family member that hates giblet gravy. Is it worth it to try to sneak giblets into the gravy?
Nah.
Because I think giblet gravy is the best.
What do you think? Okay. Were you saying yes, Francis?
Well, my first thought was disown. Yeah.
I don't know. Francis, the reason I say it doesn't matter is that usually the giblets end up being from one turkey. And there's a fair amount of gravy, and you don't get the benefit of the giblets usually. But I have been proved wrong in the past, you know. So, yeah.
Do you know if your guest is? They don't like the flavor of it. They don't want to see it. They don't want to know about it.
They don't like the texture. And I thought I could take some of the gravy. I've done this before, where I take some of the gravy and I'll put it in with the giblets, and I put it in a bullet, and I just puree it until you can't know that it's there,
mm-hmm.
and then you mix it back into the gravy stock, and at that point you hit it with the heat, a little bit of flour, and you keep it moving. And people haven't noticed it in the past, and they've loved the gravy, and then I let them know that there's giblets in it, but I fear creating wounds that won't heal.
I mean, on some level, I feel like probably you could just save them for yourself, you know, smoke them for yourself and have a little treat. I think the idea you just presented is a great one. And maybe if you want, you could just strain it so they don't see it. But again, I don't know if this person is, you know, if they really hate the flavor, if they can taste the organiness of it, you know, and they're going to be wigged out by it, so maybe that's not worth it. But if it's just like they don't want to see it, they don't like the texture, then you could certainly strain it out, or even just strain out a little bit for them.
Yeah.
All right. I appreciate that.
Actually, I want to interrupt. Sorry, one more thing. I would say I don't know if I would give up on the smoke drippings, especially since you could always, if they are too smoky, too strong, you could save a little bit of them.
Yeah, you know, right. I think I go backwards on that too, because a bit of them would add great flavor, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
To the gravy. Absolutely.
Well, the mother-in-law is bringing drippings from another turkey that was made just recently, so maybe we can do a half and half.
Oh, my God.
I like this family.
This is like a communal gravy. This is
amazing. I love it.
That's right.
Hey, a family that saves drippings for each other? What more could you ask out of life?
That's right.
I have wonderful in-laws, but maybe I should have made another selection just to be on the safe side.
Well, thanks so much for taking my call. Happy Thanksgiving.
And to you, Adam.
Yeah, happy Thanksgiving.
Great. Thank you, because that was a great save. I was brash about
the I agree. I think they would be too smoky on their own, but I think if you just take, like, you know, save a quarter cup of them, whatever, just use it to season the other.
Yeah, it could be delicious.
That could be great.
Yeah. Well, Sarah is calling from Traverse City. And Sarah, I have a feeling you have a question.
I do. I have whole cranberries, and I'm a beginner cook, and I have no idea what to do with them, but I have some fresh rosemary. I have fresh pineapple in the house. I just need some ideas. Absolutely, totally a beginner cook, but like cranberries.
This sounds delicious, by the way. But you can do a lot with that. Francis, what do you think?
I don't know. I think that's totally right. I mean, are you thinking of making like cranberry sauce? You want to do like a relish? Are you thinking, what are you thinking?
Anything. I do. I'm more of a, I do like some body to what I'm eating. But yeah, not too soupy, but maybe a little body.
Okay. Lynn, jump in anytime. But
sure.
I think if this isn't too fussy, and if it is, you can totally skip this step. But because you said you have fresh pineapple, too, I would think maybe you can cut that pineapple into nice big rings.
Okay.
Get a saute pan nice and hot. Throw in a little bit of oil, just to you know, slick the pan. Maybe on, like, medium-high heat until it gets nice and hot where the oil is kind of, like, shimmery and glowy. And lay down the pineapple and sear it. So you get nice caramelization on one side. Flip it, maybe do the other. Then I would take the pineapple out and throw your cranberries in there, maybe a little bit of water, a little bit of sugar, just to start, just to get them cooking. And then when they start cooking, they're going to burst and they're going to start releasing their own juices, and it's going to get, you know, you'll see the thickness of it. And if it's really thin, you just keep cooking until it gets nice and tight, like more like a cranberry. It's not going to look like canned cranberry sauce, like jelly necessarily, but, you know, when you start to look like, you know, like a nice sauce texture. Taste it. See if you want to add more sugar. You probably will. And then I would chop up that seared pineapple and fold it in at the end. So you have a nice, like,
that
sort
is...
of a roasty caramelized flavor, but still that, like, bright pineapple to go with all that tart cranberry. What do you think, Lynn?
You're a man after my own heart. I love it. I love caramelizing that pineapple will make it just burst with flavor, and it's going to be a beautiful counterpoint to the cranberries.
Yeah, I like the sweet and sour.
Yeah, I think it's going to really work. I think you're going to like it, and I think everybody else is going to like it too.
Yeah, and it's simple for a beginner cook, so thank you so much.
You are welcome.
Happy Thanksgiving.
And to you too. And to you too. And Francis, to you too. And thank you. I'm going to go home. I've got to find a pineapple on my way home, though.
They grow out there, don't they?
Hey, Francis. Yeah, they do. Oh, sure. In Minnesota?
Yeah.
There's a little field I can stop at. Francis, have a really good one, and thanks for doing this.
Hey, my pleasure. It's great to talk with you.
Take
Happy
care.
Happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
You too.
All right.
Now, you know how to get a hold of us by now, I think. It's 800-242-2828. Also, you can go to social media, okay, Facebook, Twitter, and send us an email, splendidtable.org. Jennifer Russell, our noble producer, is on the social media beat.
I am hanging out on Twitter.
Yeah, what did you find?
It's a ball. Red just got to us with a question. We haven't gotten to kale yet. Needs ideas for fresh kale.
I thought kale had died last year.
Well,
okay, no offense. No offense. It's okay. No, fresh kale. Okay, the first thing I would do, I think, is if you want to do a salad, one of the things you do is you massage the kale to kind of break it down a bit. And then it's wonderful just with a simple dressing of mustard, a bit of honey, and then salt and pepper, and a little bit of vinegar and oil. And you do that to taste. And it's just a delicious salad. And you could throw nuts into that, a few craisins into that. I think all of that would work.
That sounds good. I would eat that right now.
Yeah, I would too. I'm hungry. Okay, Jen, thanks.
Yeah.
We have Michael calling from Madison. Michael, I think you also have a purpose for this call.
I do, yeah. So we have a 22-pound turkey. It's been in the oven, or in the roaster, excuse me, at 375 for about 3.5 hours.
Right.
And it is already at 158 degrees. And dinner's not till 5:30.
Ah, so, okay.
That's another 5 hours away.
Oh, my. Oh, my. Yes, it is. Okay. What I would do is, and that 158 degrees, where did you get that temperature from?
We have verified it from two different meat thermometers.
Okay. So, and but where did you put the meat thermometers?
Tried to put in the thickest part of the breast.
Okay. Test also the thickest part of the thigh.
Okay.
This is what I would do. I would take it out, and there's two directions you can take with this. One is turn the heat down to the temperature you want the turkey to stay at. So 160, 165. That's one way you can do it. The other way is literally take it out, put it in a cold place, the refrigerator. If it's under 32 degrees or around 35 degrees outside, I could actually put it outside or in the garage. But the point is you want to cool it down and stop the cooking. And then what you will do is before you serve it, about 45 minutes before you serve it, you will have an oven set at about 350 and you'll put it in the oven to heat it up.
Okay, and that's just kind of in that thin slice at first and put it in a foil pack or just
you could do that. Yes, you absolutely could. Because what we talked about earlier, yes, that you could do. And that you could do by just cooking it now until you get it to 160 to 165 on the thickest part of the breast and the thigh. And then you could do that. Yes, that would be the best way to handle it.
Okay.
My mind hadn't gotten there yet.
That's all right. I'm just trying to, take all the information I can get.
No. I think that would be an excellent job. And that gives you plenty of time to use the juices from the roaster to make yourself some wonderful gravy. Yeah.
We can definitely do that.
Yeah. And then you guys can sit back and have a glass of wine, a little cider, and watch the game.
Absolutely. Great.
Hey, have a very good Thanksgiving.
You too. Thank you very much.
Okay. 800-242-2828. One of the things you should remember, too, is that if you have a turkey that's cooking too fast, all right, you can knock it down a bit in temperature. You don't want to go much below 250. But, if all of a sudden it's getting very done and you have a time to go, you can keep it at around 250 and it's going to be safe. But keep testing it because once it gets over that 160 or 165, you're heading for very dry turkey. Okay? All right. We have Alicia on the line from Baltimore. Alicia, what are you thinking about?
Hi, Lynn. It's such an honor to speak with you. Happy Thanksgiving. I am trying, I have a little dilemma. I'm going to make this great recipe that I found online called apple cider Brussels sprouts.
Ooh, that sounds good.
It does. However, Thanksgiving's not at my place, and I'm wondering, they're roasted, they're crispy roasted, and then they're finished with a sweet apple cider reduction with some cinnamon.
Right.
And I'm wondering how much could I make in advance of going, because I don't want them to get soggy. So all I've done is toss them in olive oil, salt, and pepper for now, but should I roast them now or later? What to do?
Well, here's the problem. Put yourself in the position of you're having Thanksgiving at your house.
Okay.
And somebody comes in with, I'm gather you're going to be doing it in a shallow pan, right?
Yes. Yes, that's right.
And they need the oven.
Right. Right. So I don't want to be a burden.
No, you don't want to be a burden. This is what I would do. I would cook them through. They may not be as crispy as you'd like them to be.
Okay.
I would make the sauce. And then what I would do, and this is bring a saucepan or a skillet with you, because just heat them on the stove and then heat up the sauce and put that on them. And that's it. Because it may not be ideal, but it's tough because, you know, every burner and every oven rack is going to be used.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I'm doing something similar in the sense that I'm bringing a dish you can serve at room temperature because it just – and by the way, if the sauce is hot and you have them at room temperature, not chilled, but at room temperature, they may be dynamite.
Oh, I see. So cook them through, make the sauce there.
Make the sauce ahead and then you can heat it up there.
Okay, and then if I have access to the or to the stove, then you said maybe on the stove a little bit.
Heat them up, but otherwise have them so that you can just pour that hot sauce over it. And it'll be, you know, they'll be at room temperature, but they'll taste fabulous.
You know what I like about your advice is that it's just about everything is going to be fine. Don't overstress. Perfect. So thank you for that reality check.
Well, thank you. But I have to confess something. That's because I have practically gotten ulcers over anxiety over so many things. You learn by doing, which means you learn by making mistakes and not realizing the reality of things. I am very flattered. Thank you.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you so much.
You take care. This is going to be a really good dish.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Okay.
And thanks for what you do.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. That's a lovely compliment. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
We have Sue calling from Nome, Alaska. Sue, I have to tell you, we never get enough calls from Alaska. And I have to ask.
Well, I don't know why, because we love public radio in Alaska.
Oh, good for you guys. All right. You know, everybody asked you this question, but what's the weather like up there?
Oh, I haven't checked yet, but I bet it's about zero. And for us, and we've got snow on the ground, which is lovely.
Uh-huh.
Finally, we've had two very low snow winters. We are experiencing climate change here far more drastically than many people in the lower 48 are. But it is cold, and it is clear and calm, and which is actually a real treat where I live, where it's often very windy.
That sounds really beautiful. Really beautiful.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. You love it or you hate it, and I love it.
Well, I think you probably called to talk about something else other than the weather.
Oh, I love to talk about Alaska, but no, I did. Here in Nome, we're in northwest Alaska. We are in the treeless tundra, where we gather gallons of wild tart blueberries every year. Bag them up, freeze them. Now, I've got a lot of things I do with blueberries, but my husband has asked for a blueberry pie for Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
And it's a simple question. Should I thaw these berries first before filling the pie with them, or do I just go ahead and use them frozen?
Okay. One of the things about blueberries is they throw off a lot of juice.
And these especially.
Yeah, and I think what I would do is I'd thaw them first, and I'd cheat a little. I'd boil it down. Well, thaw them, and you have a choice of doing a couple of things. One thing you can do to make that the pie will be really thick is I'd cook them down. Before I put them in the pie crust, I'd cook them down so that the juices get syrupy. Then you can add the sugar, or you could have added the sugar before that.
Okay.
And I'd pre-bake the crust.
Okay. Oh.
Okay? Because that way it won't get soggy. You know, you line it with foil, you weight it. You know, you can throw dried beans or rice or whatever in that foil. But you line it with foil or parchment. And you bake it maybe at 400 degrees until it's firm, until it stops looking raw. You know what I mean? It's about 10 minutes maybe. And then let it cool just a little bit. And then very gently, you know, pull the foil away and just remove that foil and the beans or whatever's in it. And then you've already kind of cooked and thickened the blueberries. All right. With or without the sugar. Season them however you'd like to. I like, by the way, I like a little nutmeg with blueberries or a little bit of cinnamon. That's me.
Okay.
And I love vanilla with berries. It's, again, me.
Well, I just added vanilla to my pumpkin pie right before you said vanilla and pumpkin pie.
I think it adds a nice lilt, at least to my mind. But the thing is, because it's much better to have a thick blueberry, you know, filling than to have a thin, you know, have one that's got a lot of juice thrown off. And you can season the whole thing ahead, and then you may bake it for a shorter time, too.
Now, can I still put a top crust on it if I pre-bake the bottom crust?
Absolutely, absolutely. All you have to do is brush that bottom crust, leave it flat on the pie rim, the pie plate rim. Okay, and when it's all done and you've got then the raw top crust, brush that with egg yolk, okay? Put the blueberries in, heap them up, use a ton of them, okay? And, you know, boil that down, but you want to end up with a lot of them. And then what you do is you just lay that raw crust on top and you press with your thumb all the way around so you're sealing the rim to that egg-moistened baked crust. And you can then flute and do fancy things and you bake away and you will just love it.
That is fantastic. And I wouldn't have thought of doing it. And I think I've hesitated doing blueberry pies because they end up so runny. So thank you very much.
You
my
are welcome.
Will be thrilled, I hope.
I wish I could get my hands on some of those blueberries. They sound wonderful.
Well, we like to trade you for some of the things you get that we can't get.
You know, we should talk sometime in the future.
You got it.
Okay.
Thank you and happy Thanksgiving.
And to you, too. Okay. Oh, Jen, what do we have happening on social media?
Jenny just got to us on Twitter, and she wants to know what your favorite thing to do with leftover turkey is the next day.
I have a turkey sandwich I make, and it is killer.
Bet you do.
Yeah. First of all, you need some really good chewy bread, like a ciabatta that is crusty, and you open it up, you pull out some of the inside, and then you have taken cream cheese and you've whipped it up with scallions and a little chopped onion and parsley and lemon. And you use that on one side. And on the other side, you use mustard and mayo. Then you slice the turkey, thin slice. You put some cranberry sauce on it that you've made, homemade cranberry sauce. And then you put warmed up stuffing on top of that. And then a teeny bit of gravy. And you put it all together and you try to eat it by just opening your mouth. It's the best sandwich in the whole world.
They're all going to be lined out up in front of your house tomorrow.
it's a huge, huge sandwich.
All right. We got another question about smoking the turkey. We're going to be smoking the turkey later today. What would you recommend we do for a smoky, delicious gravy? Can you tell them quickly?
Yeah, sure. I think what you want to do is just take, as Francis mentioned, take some of the juices, but take maybe a half a cup of the juices. Make a gravy on the stove and then throw half a cup of the juices in and cook it down. And I think you'll be great. And by the way, wine with smoked juices, the acidity of the wine is wonderful. So think about that too, that you'd boil wine down in the pan and then you'd add some broth and then you'd add the juices and you'd be in good shape.
That's great. We've gotten so much love over this couple of hours too. Millie says, rolls and Turkey Confidential are our traditions. Thanks to the staff for giving up family time for our family.
This is so grateful for you. We're very grateful to you. When we give thanks today, we give thanks to you. Thank you for listening and for spending Thanksgiving with us. I'm Lynn Rossetto Casper. This is the Splendid Tables Turkey Confidential from APM, American Public Media.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.